This is Joe Basso with Music Radar, and I'm speaking with Melissa Aftermauer. Did I say that right?
After hours, after an hour, Aftermauer.
How you doing there?
I'm great. I'm loving 2010 with all of my heart.
Oh, fantastic. Well, this, what do we call it, project that you're
doing? Yeah, Out of Our Minds, Melissa Aftermauer, Madam.
Yes, is multifaceted and multimedia. It's a comic book, it's a short film, it's a CD. Where did all these ideas spring from to do something that encompasses so many mediums?
Well, to give you background, I grew up in Montreal, Canada, and my mother was a wonderfully wise and artistic woman who sent me to a school named FACE, Fine Arts Core Education, and from grade one through high school, I studied music, visual arts, performance arts, did everything.
Oh boy.
So I never thought I had to choose one or the other in my life. Like I was in a band while studying photography in university when I joined Hole. And when music sort of chose me, all of a sudden my life became very dictated by music. But all the while, I mean, throughout all my time in bands, I've always taken photos. I've had photo exhibits. I've published in magazines. So I was keeping my visual art thing on the back burner, but I was doing it. And in comes the 21st century. I'm in the middle of making my second solo record about 3 or 4 years ago when all of a sudden the music industry starts to crumble. I had already decided that this new record would have a visual conceptual component just because, like I said, I've always wanted to bring all of my art forms together, but music was taking up so much time. And basically, the shift in the landscape of the way people digest audiovisual things and the rise of the internet and the breakdown of the old model of releasing records has totally freed and cracked the door to me to be able to do everything I've always wanted to do, which is bring my music, my visual, and my conceptual art all under one project. Capitol Records and I terminating our contract was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because I then got a kick in the ass. First of all, creative survivalism took over, and I realized, okay, I don't even know how I'm going to release my record, so I better just start making a film version of it, making a comic book version of it, and it was the best thing that could have happened to me creatively. And then on a business level, I decided to also time to learn the ropes and become an artist-run company, and I self-financed, self-produced, and had no one to answer to but to myself. And I have high hopes in the way that I want to share stories and connect with fellow humans, so I just kept going and kept making.
As briefly as you can now, because I'm sure it could be quite a long explanation, but what is the basic storyline of the comic book?
Well, the comic book reflects the film. The film reflects the song. And so it really comes down to, what is Out of Our Minds, the song, about? Out of Our Minds, the song, is the heart of this record. It's the single that's, you know, for free on my site. It's the title track of the record. And Out of Our Minds is a cry to travel out of our minds into our hearts standing by. It's about a need to go from the masculine, intelligent, intellectual side to the emotional feminine side of everything. It's the feminine force in all of us that is on the hunt to connect with the heart of the matter and the center of all things emotion. It's being able to cross over into the dream world and to connect with the subconscious and away from the conscious. It's quite literally a woman trying to unite her heart side with the rest of the world. The story of the film, which is what the comic book reflects, is a timeless female character who gets into a collision, who travels through time, and through that comes in contact with a Viking's heart and the center of a bleeding tree and back again. And it's time travel, and it's blood, and it's female connecting with the heart of a collision and the heart of everything.
Well, that is some story. That's not quite Iron Man, is it?
Iron Man's pretty good, isn't it?
No, yes, it is, but
little more masculine. This is the female superhero version. She's the one who can travel through time and connect with the heart of every matter.
Now, on the album, you have some pretty cool collaborators. people like Alan Moulder and Mike Frazier. What did they bring to the project?
Oh, those guys are magic mixers. So to explain the making of the record, it was one woman and a hard drive going from many different collaborators and studios. It was very interesting. I worked with a couple of different producers, an old Canadian collaborator, Jordan Zadorozny, and Chris Goss in California, which
yes.
I made my first record with. So the actual making of the songs was over the course of many years and many different trips to different places and different friends. And then those guys that you mentioned, they came on as the, you know, because when you record a record like that, the curse of modern technology is you can, like, record in, like, seven different studios over the course of a couple of years, which is quite a lot of information to make cohesive. So, in fact, the mixers were some of the most crucial elements of needing to tie this all in to itself, because in many ways it's like 12 different films that needed to live within one roof, you know,
right.
One. So that's what those guys were, mixers, and they are phenomenal.
How long did this actually take you to write? And also, does material come to you fairly easily, or is it a bit of a struggle?
Oh, no, it comes very easily when I'm in creation mode. I don't write when I'm not in creation mode. I'm not one of those people that just write through. I mean, I always keep notes of inspiration and diary entries, but when I sit down to write a record, I sit down to write a record for a year or so. This record was written pretty much, with the exception of a couple of new tracks I did towards the end, but I kind of wrote and made the record, and then I took a break and made the film and made the comic book, and then started my own Madam production house and did a lot of the business execution. But the songwriting is quite easy and flowing and natural.
How do you actually do your demos?
On a 4-track.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like an old-school 4-track?
An old 4-track Tascam cassette recorder.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you playing, aside from bass, are you playing other instruments on the record?
Yeah, I play guitar. I write most of my songs on guitar.
Okay.
But very simple, you know, minimal. But it's when I write on my 4-track, yes, it's drums. I mean, it's like a drum machine, guitar, bass, keyboards. I do some keyboards, too. A couple of the songs in the record for the first time, because I did do most of the writing alone, and then I went into studios. It was the first time I actually wrote with a drummer on a couple of songs, and Out of Our Minds came from a really great jam with a drummer named Vince Nudo that I had, a great Canadian drummer from a band called Priestess, and that was a revelation to actually write with a drummer, not a drum machine. You know, as a bass player, it is pretty sad state of affairs that there I am playing with some old crappy drum machine. So that's a reminder that I should write with more drummers in the future. Oh, and the opening track, it's called The Hunt, which is the sort of soundtrack of The Heartbeat, is one of my favorite drummers, John Stanier of Helmet.
Oh, yeah,
Battles.
Sure. Yeah, he's great.
So I've been blessed with being able to play with some of the greatest drummers in the world.
What kind of basses are you using these days?
I only use Fender Precision. That's what I've been using since my first one my father bought me for my 17th birthday.
What do you like about them so much?
It feels like an extension of my arm. It's the easiest, most natural. I just love the roundness of the body, the soft edges of the flat neck, the rosewood fretboard. It's just the easiest thing in the world to play, easier than riding a horse.
Do you actually practice? Do you sit down and do, you know, scales and finger exercises?
No, I don't. I should. I one day will expand as a bass player. But as I said, it's a very strange situation in that I either sit down to write music and play music, or I turn that off and I get down to running the business or getting ready to go on tour or doing interviews. Like, would I get off the phone with you right now and go play bass? No, I don't. Some people have that as a daily vehicle to, like, exercise stress. I don't. I don't know why, but I sort of go, I turn it on and off.
However, are there other bassists that are influences?
It's funny to say, because actually I was just at the big NAMM music convention weekend, and I did an interview for Fender online, because they're starting to do a sort of women who rock thing, and I'm a bass player, and I was explaining. I don't have many. I have as many like painters and filmmakers that are influences to me than I do bass players or musicians. But in music, it really is music that inspires me, and not individual players so much. Or maybe drummers would inspire me more than a bass player, because that's who I want to play with. There are not many. I mean, I love Eric Avery from Jane's Addiction.
Yeah.
You know, there's a small handful of bass players, but you know, the dilemma with bass players is they're kind of behind the scenes. It's hard to explain. What's good about a bass player is when you just feel them and you don't think about them.
Well, speaking of behind the scenes, your voice, particularly on this new album, is quite remarkable. You have a really dramatic delivery. Do you think you're going to surprise people with this record who only know you as a bass player, side person from other people's bands?
I don't know. Hopefully. I don't know. I mean, I will tell you one thing. You know, I did make a solo record, which, you know, 200,000 people on the planet bought and lots of people heard that didn't buy it. So I know there's some people out there that know that I sing. But that being said, had not found my voice yet. This record, I found my voice. That first record, I wrote before having ever played a live show as a front person. So that first album, I wrote alone on a four-track, and then went into a studio and recorded it. And then when I went on tour and played 200 shows to support that, every day was a new learning experience. And through those 200 shows, as a front woman, I then found my voice on this record. So hopefully people will hear that I've worked really hard and I really have something to say, which is I want to share my heart with people.
Well, it is quite remarkable. Let's talk about a couple of the songs. There's the title track, Out of Our Minds, which has some really fantastic guitar work. There's a really cool riff and some very atmospheric playing. Who did the guitar playing on that?
Yeah, that guitar player was my main collaborator on the record, Jordan Zadorozny. That was my Canadian chapter of the record very early on in the process when I was still actually on Capitol Records. We went, and it started as a demo. I was doing some demos at a friend's studio in Northern Ontario. And yeah, Jordan Zadorozny was in my first band before I joined Hole. So he's a longtime collaborator and a phenomenal guitar player.
And there's a song, it's called Lead Horse.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's the same crew. This exact same session that Out of Our Minds came out of that. That was the same drummer, Vince Nudo, Jordan Zadorozny, and me.
Now, that's an instrumental track.
Yeah, I really wanted this record to be a journey and not be, like, always action-packed with, like, a woman trying to tell her story. I wanted to be able to sit back with some... There's a couple instrumentals on the record, actually, for interludes, of just opening it up so that when the voice and the story comes back, it makes more of an impact.
And there's a track called The Key, which, again, has a really great guitar riff. Now, is that the same crew?
No, that's me. I somehow played all the guitars on that. That's one of my... That song, I feel like, is almost sort of a little, like, Dumbo bonehead rock, but I got that in me. I just have it. I can't help it, but it's fun to play.
Now, what's funny is I was really struck by the guitar playing on that track, okay, and I was going to ask, now, do you generally give instruction to guitar players on what you want, but... I guess you gave yourself the instruction.
Yeah, actually, in that song, there is a Jordy White, actually. He does the atmospheric stuff on that song,
okay.
Like, he played through a space echo. So Jordy White from Marilyn Manson, who I've known from, you know, and he also was in all those other bands, Perfect Circle and Nine Inch Nails, but he came to visit on that track, actually, to do lots of tweaky stuff. I'm more of a meat and potatoes guitar player, like a rhythm guitar player, and then I love, my favorite thing in collaborating with guitar players is inviting the real space monster / lead guitar player guys to come on and do really, you know, top layer tweakiness. Yeah.
Tell me about working with Glenn Danzig on the song Father's Grave. How did that come about? And what was he like to work with?
I mean, I don't even have enough hours in the day to tell you how phenomenal and what a dream come true that entire collaboration was. I mean, I literally have had five dreams in music since I was a kid, and I've accomplished quite a few of them, and this was like the top one. I wanted to do a duet with Glenn Danzig since I heard him when I was 17. I prayed and wrote letters and sent to a P.O. box a letter about my feelings for him and what kind of role model he's been as a persona, as a person. I mean, I credit sort of the persona of Glenn Danzig or Vikings is how I have managed to find the rock bones in me to play rock music. So he's a huge mentor to me, and his voice in particular, believe it or not, influenced a lot the way I sing. Although I'm just a choir trained good Canadian girl, he really, really has influenced me. And I wrote that song for he and I to sing. I sent him a demo of me singing his part and me singing my part. Wrote him a 2-page letter explaining how much he has influenced me and how sacred the union would be to me. And then I got on a plane and went to Comic-Con to meet him face to face at his comic book. He has a business dealing in rare comic book panels, He has a booth at Comic-Con every year. And I went to Comic-Con to look at him, you know, eye to eye, face to face, to show the respect of, you know, you gracing my record would be one of my lifelong dreams. And he was the most generous, sensitive punker than anybody. That guy has taken DIY over everyone's head. He is so independent. He is fiercely committed to his integrity and his he's phenomenal. I could not have imagined him being more inspiring than he already was. It was phenomenal. And it's a song about a grave digger and a young woman, myself, who lost her father. And he is a man who dug her father's grave. And through this union, through this conversation between a grave digger and this woman, she finds peace in letting in sort of the healing of the loss of her father.
Well, you are quite a fan.
I am. And he's from New Jersey.
He is from New Jersey. And I'm speaking from New Jersey, so there you go. Now, switching gears a little bit. Now, I've seen a video of you with your cover band, which I guess you don't have anymore, but it was
my brief stint as Ozzy in a Black Sabbath cover band.
Yes, Hand of Doom.
Yeah, it's amazing. I really get asked that. I will actually tell you a beautiful life story. On a Saturday, I went to visit the former bass player in Hand of Doom, my friend Molly Stern, and she went into labor with her third child while I was visiting her, and I sat and held her stomach in her hands while she watched the contractions go from 4 minutes to 3 minutes, and the midwife came and I left. And during her giving labor, we talked about the Black Sabbath cover band and how we are both asked at least once a week or once a month about our Black Sabbath cover band.
That's
it's
excellent.
Phenomenal. We really made a splash, and we only played 6 shows and made 1 live album. And the point about that project was, what cover bands make a live album? We did. Hand of Doom, live in Los Angeles. We played the Sunset Strip. We played a Canada Day party in Toronto, and we played my hometown of Montreal, one show in New York, and that was our life. That was the entire life of the band, and somehow made an impact.
And who else gives birth and talks about Black Sabbath?
Exactly. Only my magic friend Molly Stern.
That's amazing. Let me ask you about your image now, okay? Now,
you
come across in pictures and on your albums as pretty provocative. Are you comfortable portraying this kind of image, very sexual and dominant?
God, no. I mean, that's funny. I always think of myself as quite Victorian, actually, and properly exposing feminine elements. I've never been one to, like, take off my shirt or be photographed in underwear. I'm, in fact, usually quite dressed from head to toe. Possibly am I afraid of, you know, showing that I'm a woman and that there's a magical, witchy mysticalness to every woman? No. I guess that's what I'm trying to show, is the feminine powers that be.
Okay. Let's go back into some of your previous bands now.
This will be the brief part.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Hole.
Mm-hmm.
Which you originally, as I understand, you originally turned down the invitation to be in the band.
It's true.
Why was that?
Because I was in my own band.
Okay.
It's quite literally that was why. I was busy, and I was finishing my photo degree. I was in a band with a boyfriend at the time, who's still my best friend. And I also had seen Hole, and I also had known, it was an invitation to, I ended up taking it in the end, but I was replacing a tragically deceased individual. Kurt had also just tragically died earlier. It was, accept, in the end, I accepted it as my fate that there was a reason they asked me and wanted me to take. You know, it was a very, very emotionally complex position to take. I ended up rising to the occasion and taking the position with honor but it is very intense. You know, my years in Hull are almost as much emotional, almost more emotional life lessons than they are musical. You know, it was very, very dominated by a lot of very intense emotional experiences.
Courtney Love, of course, is a very polarizing figure.
Mm-hmm.
Some people love her, some people don't. Was that a difficult period for you, which I'm guessing it was? Do you feel she gets a bad rap?
Yeah, I mean, the world loves demonizing women. They're so terrified of a strong, outspoken woman, you know, still, even in the 21st century, but, you know, even more so 100 years ago, 50 years ago. So, of course, she's, you know, she represents things that everyone's afraid of, the mad woman, you know. But, I mean, do I think that the scary parts of her are over-focused on, and that the talent and that the incredible ability to offer her gut, her demons, her heart, every single performance she's ever given, she's given all of that. I mean, that ideally would be what people should be focusing on and not the tabloid stuff, but I understand why they're distracted. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if she thinks she's got a bad rap. I mean, she's just honestly being herself, and there's a lot going on, and people talk about it.
As a bass player and a musician, was she okay to work with? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was sometimes a lot more to do with, like, personal relations than it was music. You know, we made one record in 5 years, so there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it was my work on Celebrity Skin, I'm incredibly proud of, and I love
helping. Very good record, by
the way. Very
good record.
Thank you. I think that's underrated, honestly. I mean, the amount of work musically we all put into that, every one of us, is quite... I mean, we worked on that for years. I think it's a really, really well-achieved piece of music, and I wish that more people thought of that when they thought of Hole. But I'm very proud of my musical contribution to that band. And, yeah, she always wanted the music to be bigger, better, and that was a big part of why that record achieved the level of sort of craftsmanship, and she was very supportive of me finding my craft, and that was great.
And, of course, you also played for a time with the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, talk about craft. That was my ultimate music lesson. That was my final master's in music playing. I mean, playing with James, Jimmy, and Billy was the most, probably the biggest, you know, musical experience for growing and learning than I'll ever have. I'll never have anything like that again. Learning their catalog, touring for a year and a half straight, playing 2 to 5 hours a night. I mean, that was the most incredible musical lesson of my life. I would probably one of the most valuable years I'll ever have in my life. I wouldn't have been able to make this record had I not done that.
So even though you were with the band when they were at, I guess, the tail end of
mm-hmm.
one period of the Pumpkins,
mm-hmm.
it was still a very pleasant experience.
Absolutely. That's all music. You know, if Hole was sort of personal and politics and the Pumpkins, only music. There's no time for anything else but music. I have a lot of respect for Billy because of that.
Now, I know you've offered your services to, I guess, jump back in if Billy ever needed you.
Because I said that once to one reporter?
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I get, you know, now that was a couple of years ago. I mean, would I play with Billy? Yes, he's incredibly talented. Under what formation? I don't know what would happen there. But, you know, obviously we know I'm not a founding member of the Smashing Pumpkins, so I'm just a fan that got to join my favorite band. So, yeah, right now I don't know, you know, I haven't really thought about that option because it's not there right now.
What are your plans now for 2010 as far as touring behind this record?
Playing as many shows as I can, but also exercising the ability to share this project and this story in as many formats as possible. I mean, my goal was tell a story, the story of Out of Our Minds, in as many mediums as possible. So I got the song, I got the comic, I got the film, I've got the live show, but this can exist. I mean, it's already been presented at film festivals, it's in an installation at a fine arts museum, I presented it at a science fiction convention. I mean, it can be. My hope is that I can be given any space on the planet Earth, and I will tell the story of Out of Our Minds. So if you give me an empty room, I will fill it with something. And that is back to the survivalism, is I am here to tell a story, and I will survive under any conditions that you give me.
Hey, just a tip. You might want to go for that 3D thing. I think
that's true. Great. I'll add another. Actually, I've talked about surround sound mix of the film and the album, but I hadn't quite gone to the 3D world yet. Oh, boy. That'll have to be the next project.
No blue people in this one?
Definitely no blue people in this one. Yes. So are worlds of utopia where everything is love all the time.
There you go.
Hey, yeah.
Hey, thank you very much. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much for... Yeah, going through the whole scope of the whole thing. Thank you.
It's really great music. I'm really loving it. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
And the record is called
Out of Our Minds.
Yes. And this is right. Joe Basso for Music Radar.
I'm Melissa Ostermauer.
Whose name I got
2010,
right.
And we believe in living life to its fullest.
Thank you again. It's been really great.
Thank you.
All right, you take care.
Bye-bye, Joe.
Bye-bye now.